We are now.
Yep, there we go. All right, much better. All right.
minor details.
You know, by the way, I actually learned that that Napoleon Bonaparte had I don't remember how related to him, but you know, descendant who in World War I or World War II, I don't remember which, actually tried to join the French military, and they even at the time of World War II were like, Bonaparte? No. No, you're not joining the military this time.
I guess that's become a lasting thing that when they say your family,
when they ban you forever, you are banned forever.
It takes on a whole new meaning, banned forever. Even after you're gone, your descendants are banned.
Oh, there's a lot of drama that happens with the Bonaparte family, apparently. I was doing some research for the for the fun of it, and so there are two heads of the House of Bonaparte right now. One of them is the grandfather, and the other one, I guess the heir. There are two heirs, I should say. One of them is the son's father, obviously, and then the other one is the son, because the father for some reason doesn't do the whole politics thing that the Bonaparte family is about. So he was just kind of overstepped in the in the secession. So his son now is gonna get it. Well, I guess his the head's grandson.
But they're still around. Amazing.
Their name carries weight in France to this day.
That's amazing.
I think so. Let's see here. In 1836.
Just remind people that. On this day in history.
Oh, yes. Okay, yeah. That's probably a good thing. On this day in history, in 1836, the HMS Beagle with Charles Darwin reaches Sydney, Australia, who is Charles Darwin, for those of you who don't know, is known for popularizing the theory of evolution. Well, I guess there were multiple theories, but specifically Darwinism, which is still the basis for most evolutionary theories today.
Correct. Yes. What was the title of his work? Do you know the title of his work?
I cannot remember.
The Origin of Species.
Look at that. You got that one down. I should buy a copy of that.
A good one. I'll lend you a copy.
I didn't know you had a copy.
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah.
I mean, if you know, you're gonna be, if I'm gonna be a strong proponent of creationism, I should at least know what the other side is saying.
You know, me and my friends are gonna actually start a book club.
Okay.
So I'll be sure to bring that one up. We'll read that one.
All right.
On this day in history, in 1839, anthracite, I think, coal, first used to smelt iron in Mauchunk, Pennsylvania.
So it was in 1839 that they first used anthracite coal to smelt iron.
Yes.
Interesting.
In Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
You know, iron's been around for a lot longer than I imagined it. It's been around.
There was the Bronze Age. There was the Iron Age.
Well, I guess 1836 isn't all that far away.
It's not.
Or, sorry, 1839.
So my question is, what did they use prior to anthracite coal to smelt iron?
You know, I'm not sure.
Okay.
That'd be a good question. On this day in history, in 1848, there was an unsuccessful people's uprising that began in Palermo, Sicily.
Palermo, Sicily?
Yep, I didn't know how to pronounce it. You got it, though.
So the Italians were doing insurrections long before we were.
Oh, yeah, no, okay. No, for sure. In 1861, Florida state troops demand the surrender of Fort Pickens during the U.S. Civil War.
Wow.
1863, Confederate President Jefferson Davis delivers his State of the Confederacy address.
See, they copied that from they copied that from the North. We'll have a State of the Union address too.
You know, I don't know why, but Jefferson Davis really interests me. It's probably because I don't know anything about him, if I'm being honest. It's just the fact that he was a, I don't want to say illegitimate president, but because he was president of a country that was around for not very long, but they were around.
You know, I think probably most people don't know very much about Jefferson Davis, and I would include myself.
I would say that most people probably don't even know who Jefferson Davis is.
And, you know, that's really kind of sad because, you know, the Civil War, the whole thing about the secession of the South from the United States, that's like a major historical happening in our country. I mean, you know, it really, the survival of our country hinged on whether or not the South was successful. And yet, I would agree, for something as important as it is, most people probably don't know anything about it.
I mean, you learn about it in school, but like, you know, I mean, I don't think that you learn about, I mean, I assume the government's roughly the same as the government that we have, but you don't learn about any of their politicians, or like, you didn't learn about Jefferson Davis. You learned about Robert E. Lee and like Stonewall Jackson in the military part, though.
Yeah, the guys that got statues.
Yeah, the guys that got statues. That's a good way to put it. On this day in history, in 1896, the first X-ray photo took place in the United States.
Wow.
From Dr. Henry Smith out of Davidson, North Carolina.
And nobody knows who Dr. Henry Smith is.
Nope. Nobody knows. The X-ray is pretty cool, though. Saved a lot of lives. Very useful.
Well, it's extremely useful. You know, really, it took medicine a long way in that now if you break a bone, they can see, you know, how bad it's broken or not broken. And, yeah, I mean, it's been very useful. And you can see cool things like you can see an X-ray of a person's skull where the bullet is like still embedded in the, you know, bone and skull. Just think if they'd have had social media back then when they first got the X-rays, all the cool X-rays that you could post on social media, you know, things that you'd see for the first time.
No, I think X-ray overall would be the neatest thing to me when it would have first come out. Could you imagine seeing a picture of your skeleton?
Exactly.
And it's your skeleton?
Because you'd never seen it before. You'd never seen what your bones really look like inside the skin. And to see that would have been pretty cool.
I mean, I think it's still pretty cool, you know, now. In 1898, Ito Hirobumi began his third term as the Prime Minister of Japan, who I do believe was also the first Prime Minister of Japan, so apparently he was popular to make it at least three terms.
Could you pronounce his name again?
I think it's Ito Hirobumi.
That'll work.
In 1906, the Football Rules Committee legalizes the forward pass.
How about that? Now, see, I didn't know that it wasn't legal from the very beginning.
Honestly, when I was doing research for this list, neither did I. I was like, they really switched up the whole game of football. They said, run sport, so you can throw that ball now. And all of a sudden, there you had to add new positions. They added routes. They added, it was neat.
Do you know, were you allowed to do a lateral? You just couldn't forward pass? I mean, were you allowed to lateral the ball, or did you always have to just hand it off?
I assume you could do, because it states...
a backward pass?
Forward pass. You could probably do backward passes, like toss-off plays and things like that, but I don't think... I didn't know it was ever not allowed to pass forward, honestly. That's crazy.
Yeah, because in 100 years, you know, like today, which is 100 years past that, you know, where they allowed the forward pass. Now look how so much of the game relies on the forward pass. I mean,
they honestly switched up the whole strategy around the game at that point.
Yeah, amazing. Did you know they were allowed to have a forward pass, Scott?
I didn't know that. Still not baseball.
I'm sure there's some. I think there's a few baseball ones on here for you.
That's why I turned to you, because I know what a baseball guy you are. So I just thought, you know, I'd say
forward pass, no forward pass. It's not baseball.
Also in 1906, Henry Campbell Bannerman's cabinet, which included H.H. Asquith, David Lord, Lloyd George, and Winston Churchill, embarks on sweeping social reforms after a liberal landslide in the British election.
I didn't know that.
Neither did I.
As a matter of fact, the only name in there that I recognized was Winston Churchill.
I know, I recognized David Lord, Lloyd George, but I couldn't tell you where or why I know the name. But Winston Churchill has got to be one of the most instrumental people in history.
Yep.
I mean, he's almost the sole purpose for the United States helping in World War II.
You know, to be honest with you, of the world leaders in the Second World War, which would, you know, of the United States, Great Britain, and Russia, or the Soviet Union, I would say, personally, I feel that Churchill was the most important and the most dynamic leader of the three.
Oh, I think by far. I think he, I mean, even his, like, I mean, Winston Churchill was a very, was an influential man. I think that, I mean, if you look at the other people around the time, like, you got Benito Mussolini, you got Adolf Hitler, you have Winston Churchill, and I think Woodrow Wilson at the time. And he, I mean, he had to have hit it on the head. I mean, I think he probably got it right.
Absolutely.
We have somebody on the line. You're on, caller.
Yeah, Matt, you guys were talking about the pass in football?
Yeah.
Okay, here's a thing I don't know if you guys know. You're only allowed to forward pass once. But if you're passing backwards, you know, you can pass all you want backwards. You just, you know, on forward pass, it can only be one time.
Oh, you know, I don't think I've ever really thought about it, but I think, it, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah. Did you ever notice how, you know, when it's a backward pass, if the guy misses it, you know, they all scramble to get it?
And it just becomes one big, like, passing around the football game.
Another down, you know.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add my two cents in, and you might be able, can you talk a little bit louder?
I mean, I can try. I think that, I think that...
Or closer to the mic or something?
For some reason, this mic doesn't pick me up very well, because, like, when Scott uses it, you can hear Scott fine, but when I use it, for some reason, it seems that I appear to be far away from the microphone.
Well, sometimes mics don't like you, do they?
No, no, they don't.
Okay, I'll talk to you guys later.
Alrighty, thank you for the call.
Yeah.
You just gotta work on your projection.
I think, yeah, that's probably what it is.
Yeah, just work on your projector.
On this day in history, 1913, after using other pseudonyms over the years, Joseph Dzugin-Zhevely, I cannot pronounce that, signs himself as Stalin, Man of Steel, in a letter to the social and to the newspaper Social Democrat.
So, okay.
I did not know up until today that Stalin's last name was not Stalin. Stalin was a pseudonym.
Read that again. Was Stalin a pseudonym, or did he use other pseudonyms?
After using other pseudonyms over the years, he signed himself as Stalin, meaning okay. Man of Steel.
Okay, so he was Stalin, but he was using pseudonyms all along, and not until 1913 did he use his actual name.
Well, no, because his actual name is there. I just really struggled reading that last name.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay, so, all right, so this dude named Joseph Dzugashvili is the guy that used Stalin as one of his pseudonyms.
Yeah, except this is Stalin.
Okay. So does that mean, like, someday we're going to find out that Scott's real name is, you know, Scott whatever, and he's just been using a pseudonym of Scott Spears?
You know, it wouldn't surprise me.
If it isn't broke, don't fix it.
If it's not broke, don't fix it. In 1915...
On this day in history...
On this day in history, the U.S. United States House of Representatives... This is a good one. The United States House of Representatives rejects the proposal to give women the right to vote.
All right.
isn't that something that's fun to look back on?
Now, here, I'm gonna give you a little assignment. You should look into the whole movement of getting the women's right to vote. And Susan B. Anthony, we know who she is. Susan B. Anthony said on multiple occasions the biggest opposition that they received was from women. It was not from men, it was from women that were against women having the right to vote. So you dig into that, and we'll talk about it next week.
That's interesting to mm-hmm. me. I don't know why, as a woman, you wouldn't want the right to vote. Well, I think that that's something that you would see as a plus.
She said that was where the biggest opposition came. So now you got a homework assignment.
Okay, all right. I'll do some research. On this day in history, in 1916, Britain proclaims Gilbert and Ellis Islands as colonies in the Pacific, which is, you know, typical Britain stuff. They got colonized. Yeah. Britain loves the colonization.
At one point, they owned half the world or more.
Oh, I mean, like, around the time of, like, World War II, they owned, obviously, the United Kingdom, or, I guess, Great Britain. They owned a large portion of Africa. They owned Canada, New Zealand, Australia. Like, they were basically, they basically owned, like, half the world almost. Yeah.
There was a saying that the sun never sets on the British Empire, meaning that at any time there was...
It was daytime somewhere.
It was daytime somewhere, that's right. Like, kind of like that saying, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. But I think that's about something else.
A little bit different. On this day in history, in 1916, Max Immelmann and Oswald Bolecki received the Pour le Mérite, the German Empire's highest military award for achieving eight aerial victories each over Allied aircraft.
Oh, so they were the top guns of their time.
Yeah, the best of the best, apparently.
But you know what? Nobody today remembers who they are. I mean, did you recognize those names?
No, not a bit. On this day in history, in 1918, Montreal Canadiens center Joe Malone scores 5 goals in a 9-4 win over Ottawa to become the first 20-goal scorer in NHL history.
Interesting.
I think that is interesting because there's also a little tidbit I added on here. And he went on to score 44 goals in just 20 games.
Wow, I bet Wayne Gretzky never did that.
He put up, I think his this guy was compared to Wayne Gretzky because the season was so much shorter, but right. 44 in 20 games, Wayne Gretzky had 92 or something like that in however many game long a hockey, I think it's like the hockey season's like, what, 70-something, 80-something. But, so like, he put up, on average, more points a game than Wayne Gretzky did.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing, too, when you look back on, you know, whatever the sport is, basketball, football, baseball, when you had these great players from 60, 70, 80 years ago, you always have to take into consideration that all those sports had shorter seasons than they do now. I mean, we're playing basketball year round. I mean, you know, they start August 1st, and they have the, you know, NBA Finals on, you know, July 2nd. I mean, they just play all year round. And baseball, they've managed to, like, creep into, like, the World Series is played now, like,
Late October.
And I swear, when I was a kid, it was, like, the beginning of October.
Yeah, it was late September sometimes.
So, yeah, right, exactly. And, you know, football, you know, they start playing in August. And, you know, the Super Bowl isn't till February. I think the first Super Bowls were, like, early January.
Oh, they were.
Yeah, so, you know, just...
Yeah, there are, because there are some Super Bowls on this list we got to talk about, you know? let's see here. Here's one I'm sure Scott would appreciate. In 1920, annual drafting of baseball players from minor leagues to be done in inverse order of the final standings. Agreed to.
Oh. So that sounds like maybe before that they were allowing them draft according to who had the best schedule.
I think they were drafting based on, like, so if you won the championship, basically, you get first pick.
First pick, yeah.
But I think it makes more sense this way anyways, because then there's...
You let the...
Worst chance, get best players.
That's right.
It'll build a cycle there.
That way the crummiest teams get to draft the best players. Well, that helps keep the salaries down, too. You know, because if you're a crummy team, you know, you can only pay so much, but...
In 1932... on this day in history, Hattie W. Carraway elected the first woman senator. She was a Democrat out of Arkansas.
Impressive.
I don't know why more women don't get involved in politics. I think that women tend to have a different outlook on things. So yeah. I think that the more women in politics we had, it would be better. A wider view of perspective there.
Okay. So does this mean you're a Nikki Haley fan?
No. No. In 1933, uprising of the Guardia Civil War in Spain. 25 die. You know, I don't know anything about the Civil War, but 25 deaths in a whole Civil War is that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
That's real good. We should have tried to keep our numbers down a little
for
bit.
For real, yeah, that would have been nice.
Hey, we got a couple guys got killed. Okay, we give up.
Don't shoot.
Hey, they're shooting with real bullets.
I don't think they got the memo. Where was I at here?
Spain Civil War.
Right.
1933.
Also in 1933, U.S. Congress recognizes the Philippines' independence.
Well, now that's interesting.
For those of you who did not know, the Philippines used to be like a puppet state of the United States, almost.
Well, they're called possessions. We have U.S. possessions. Like, we, you know, that's what Puerto Rico is. It still is a U.S. possession, Guam, that type of thing.
Oh, yeah, U.S. territories?
Yeah, exactly. And, it's better to call them U.S. territories than possessions, because that, you know, now we get into the whole politically correct thing. But you know, what's interesting is on the same date in the same year, we recognize Philippines independence, which, by the way, we had gotten the Philippines from Spain, and they had a Spanish Civil War all on the same day. So while they're fighting over there, we're saying, well, yeah, Philippines, we recognize you as independent. There was a common tie there.
Somewhere along the way. Let's see. You skip 7 years, and then all of a sudden you got World War II. The Soviets bombed cities in Finland. That would have been the Winter War.
Yeah. It doesn't matter what time of year it was. It was a winter war up there in Finland. That's all they know is winter.
That started the 30th of November 1939 and ended the 13th of March 1940. And I wanted to add the date in there because it's pretty upsetting that the Soviets were bombing cities in Finland on January 12th of 1940, just for a month later the war to end.
There you go.
You got bombed a little late.
Yeah, just a little.
1942, British troops reconquer Solomon, Egypt. Same concept, for those of you who didn't know. Like I said earlier, Britain used to own like a large portion of Africa, and Egypt was included in that.
Yeah. You know, just as a side note, just to show you the worldwide control that Britain had in various places, you know, they were... Britain was in control of that land that Israel now calls home. Even though that land was Israel going back 2,000 years, as that land got taken over and used by other countries, Britain still had, at the time of the First World War, had control over that land. As a matter of fact, it was called the Palestine Mandate. And that had to do with how that land eventually became Israel. But it's just, again, an example of Great Britain having control of and having their fingers over, I mean, almost, you know, so many countries around the world.
I mean, nobody wanted to mess with Great Britain because, like, even if Great Britain didn't manage to get any allies into war with them, you're not only fighting Great, like, the Great yeah. Britain is an ally in and of itself because they had so many, like, they had so many colonies back in the day that, like, you were literally fighting, you know.
The only people who had the guts to take on Great Britain was the colonists here in America.
Exactly.
We showed the world. You can, there, David can stand up to the Goliath.
In 1944, on this day in history, British Prime Minister Winston Churchill and French General Charles de Gaulle began a two-day wartime conference in Marrakesh.
Oh, so they were hanging out in Marrakesh.
Like I said, once again, he is got to be the most instrumental person in the war.
Yeah, he was. You know, this is a side note that nobody cares about, but I actually came within 15 feet of Charles de Gaulle. It was 1967. We were at the World Expo in Montreal, and you know, Quebec is a very French part of Canada. So we were going to the expo in Montreal, and we were in the airport in Montreal, and all of a sudden there's just a ton of policemen come streaming down the staircase at the airport. They push everybody off to the sides, and this entourage of probably 40 men in suits comes down the stairs, and right in the middle of it was Charles de Gaulle, because at that time he was the leader of France in 1967. So we're all standing along the wall, and I was just a kid, and like, you know, what's going on? And of course my mom, you know, she says, that's Charles de Gaulle, that's Charles de Gaulle.
One of my friends who was listening, by the way, he sent me a message, and he said that Britain gained Egypt and where Israel is from, the Ottomans,
right,
during some peace deal at the end of World War I.
That's correct. That was the end of the Ottoman Empire, which, by the way, that had about a 400-year run, 360 or something like that.
I was just about to say, the Ottomans stuck around for a lot longer than a majority of the empires that were existing throughout any of history.
They came in sometime in the 1500s. I don't know the exact year. It was sometime in the 1500s, and they, like I said, they were around for almost 400 years.
In 1945, on this day in history, German forces in Belgium retreat in the Battle of the Bulge.
Yeah.
So, I like my World War II history, so I know a lot about World War II. The Battle of the Bulge was like Germany's like last-ditch effort to do anything in the war, because they were getting stalled out, and they were slowly losing ground on both fronts. And they decided that they were going to, because early in the war they did some encircling movements to capture like large units of Allied troops, and it worked out astoundingly. And Hitler said, "We're going to do that same exact thing again," and it didn't work out this time.
Didn't work out too good. How's that working for you, Adolf?
Once, also in 1945, U.S. Task Force 38 destroys 41 Japanese ships in the Battle of the South China Sea.
Wow. 41 ships, that's a bunch.
This took place during the Black China Sea raids, and I'm not exactly sure what the exact goal was, other than to, I know they targeted Navy vessels and their supply routes, but other than that, I don't really know what they were doing in the Black China Sea. Other than fighting Japan, you know?
Yeah.
Probably the island hopping campaigns.
There you go.
1948, look at that. We got three.
Wow.
U.S. Supreme Court decision in Sipuel versus Oklahoma State Board of Regents.
Yes. Okay. Do you want to enlighten us a little bit on that? That
if I'm being 100% honest with you, I meant to do some research on that. I did not do. I did not do research.
Because I have to say, I haven't heard about that case. If I have, I've completely forgotten. So.
Well, let's see.
The Board of Regents.
Sipuel versus the Board of Regents of the University of Oklahoma, 332 U.S. 631 is a per curiam United States Supreme Court decision involving racial segregation towards African Americans by the University of Oklahoma and the application of the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution.
There you go.
Look at that.
How about that?
1949.
On this day in history.
On this day in history, a Dutch court affirms the death sentence against SS chief Hans Rauter.
Oh, okay. So, a Nazi.
They were hunting down the Nazis after World War II, and they were giving them death sentences.
There you go.
I think that's reasonable.
Yes, it was.
In 1950, the USSR reintroduces the death penalty for treason, espionage, and sabotage.
Well, that's one way to keep things under control when you're, you know, when you've got a dictatorship.
My mom insisted that I tell this little story while on this show, so I'll go ahead and do it. She wanted me to tell you guys about this time, so I took this elective in high school. It was called a Wars and Foreign Policy, and in a Wars and Foreign Policy, I asked my teacher so many questions that were both related and not related to what we were learning that he started limiting me to one question a class period.
Did you ever get to the point where it was one question a class period and you must submit it 6 hours in advance?
No.
But you know what? I mean, that's good if you were that kind of a kid that you were asking questions.
And he told me to stop asking so many questions and it limited me to one.
So did you?
If you asked him a second question, he said, you already used your one.
Oh, yeah.
He just wouldn't answer.
All right.
I'm like, all right, well. Nice.
Good for being inquisitive. On this day in history.
Oh, here we go. 1952, the second NFL Pro Bowl, Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. The NFC, the National Conference, beats the American Conference, the AFC, 30-13. They got killed.
Yeah.
MVP was Dan Towler, a Los Angeles Rams fullback. The fullback is basically a dead position in football at this point in time. Not many teams still have a fullback, and the ones that do don't get used very often. Like, the fullbacks don't get used very often. And in 1952, the fullback
was the most valuable player. You know, it's interesting because I was listening to most of the Buckeye games this past year, and it's interesting that this came up because one of the comments that I heard made a couple of times on a couple of the games was that they referred to one of the OSU players. I'm sorry, I can't remember which one it is, but if you follow it real close, you would know. But they mentioned one of the OSU football players is saying he is lining up and playing like a true fullback position. So that tells you that how it's gone away.
Yeah. Like, the fullback, I mean, the fullbacks back in the day were basically utilities. They ran the ball, and they caught the ball.
And they blocked. Yeah.
But, like, nowadays, like, fullbacks catch the ball on occasion, but, like, they're just blockers now.
Right.
They're mainly just another body to block for the running back.
Yeah.
1954, Queen Elizabeth II. Sorry, 1954, Queen Elizabeth II opens New Zealand Parliament.
There you go. Queen Elizabeth from Great Britain opens the Parliament in New Zealand. That was one of their colonies. So once they gained their independence, then the Queen just went around and just did ceremonial things because, what the heck, she's lost her empire.
You know, that really did, like, I actually have to do some research on the United Kingdom, because how did they lose their empire? They lost everything. They spanned the globe almost.
And most of it came from them granting independence to those colonies and giving them, you know, the colonies.
Oh, they just granted them independence?
In many cases, yeah, in most cases. I mean, Canada was granted their independence, you know, like Bahamas and all that kind of stuff.
Did they, I mean, I don't know, India, did they grant India's?
I don't know if there was an uprising in India, but...
Because I know that there was a Free India movement,
right.
But I do believe that the Free India movement stopped.
Yeah, I don't believe that it resulted in war. I believe they were granted independence.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, we gotta find the things again.
We're almost up to my lifetime.
Almost. Yeah. 1957, the Southern Christian Leadership Council, the SCLC, founded by Martin Luther King Jr. as leader at Ebenezer Church in Atlanta.
I didn't know that it was founded that year, but I did know he was from the Ebenezer Church. Interesting.
I didn't know he was from the Ebenezer Church, but I knew he founded the SCLC.
And see, I didn't know that. If you had said, when do you think that he had founded that, I would have thought maybe that was like in the early 60s. So I learned something new.
That's good. That's the best part about history. It goes on forever. There's always something new to learn.
That's right. That's the whole idea, is you learn something. And when you learn something, it makes you a more rounded individual.
Absolutely. I think everybody should strive to be more rounded.
That's right. Plus, it'll make you a better player in Trivial Pursuit.
1958, the 8th NFL Pro Bowl, L.A. Memorial Coliseum. The Western Conference beat the Eastern Conference 26-7. For some reason, there are two MVPs on this one. It looks like one offensive and one defensive. So the offensive MVP was Hugh McElhinney. He was a San Francisco 49ers running back. And Gene Britto, a Washington Redskins defensive end.
And this was in 1958?
1958.
So you gave two MVPs.
MVPs.
This is the very beginnings of DEI. Diversity, equity, never mind.
And inclusion?
Yeah.
In 1958 as well, the NCAA added a two-point conversions football. In 1958, the NCAA added two-point conversions to football scoring.
Ah. And this is a side note. Do you know when the NBA started the three-point?
I do not know.
Okay.
You're listening to The Talking Place. Just listen to former star of The Jeffersons and 227, Marla Gibbs.
Where did the name Marla come from? It's so unique.
I made it up.
Really?
My name is Marla.